The following program contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Taking your relationship to the next level. This is Passion with Dr. Lori.
Welcome to Passion, a show about love, sex, and relationships. I'm Dr. Lori Battito. I'm a clinical psychologist. I have a specialty in sexuality. We're here Monday to Friday, 10 to 11 p.m., and we've been doing this now for over 18 years. So very happy to be talking with you. And every month, every week, really, we have different features and such. And for the last few years, we've had Pierre and Catherine of BDSMCircle.com join us in studio for our BDSM panel, or what we call alternative sexuality. So we'll discuss anything that is alternative. And I have to tell you, in 18 years, what's alternative has changed a lot. So, you know, 18 years ago, this kinky stuff was not necessarily alternative. It was on another level. Now it's just become another variation of what's considered part of the norm, if you will. And especially when we look at the statistics now, which I think are either different, or people are talking about it more or admitting to it more. But if you look at the statistics, just in Quebec, over 45% of Quebecers are actually interested in some form of alternative sexuality. Either they fantasize about it, engage in it, or want to try it. So that's a big number. So that's one of the reasons that we started doing this show, is this particular segment on the show, is because even though many of you listening it may be completely out of your range, but for a lot of people, it isn't. It actually is part of their lifestyle, their fantasy life, their interests, their searches on porn, or whatever else it is. So,
well, there's a lot of things that have happened, because 20 years ago, it used to be secret.
That's right. We didn't talk about it. Only was it secret, it was considered perverted.
Yeah, perverted.
Exactly. Really taboo.
Well, it was taboo, but it was in my line of work.
Like the weirdos.
We called them perversions, and yep. We've now, even in the psychiatric circles, even in our manual, mm-hmm. like our big Bible, these things have been taken out.
So it's no longer, well, I think it's because now doctors are realizing that people can be mentally healthy, functioning, you know, contributing members of society, and like a bit of kink in the bedroom.
That's right. That's right. And studies have shown that, because sometimes we will get people who will comment and say, oh, that's just sick, or use the word sick and crazy and whatever
absolutely.
Else, which is interesting, because the studies don't back that up. The studies, in fact, show quite the opposite. They do show people who engage in alternative lifestyles to be psychologically healthy. Healthier in some elements, like in communication.
But I have a little theory on that. And sometimes it's the ones that are like, oh, that is so sick, that's just disgusting, they're the ones that are really inside, they're being turned on by it, or they're fascinated by it.
Well,
and they can't handle it. So they you know, it often is. And there's lots of people that you talk to who have found it late in life, and they'll admit that, you know, 20 years before, they were the first ones to come out and say, oh, that's terrible.
Right.
And then, you know, they kind of grow into themselves.
Which is interesting, because, we do see a lot of that. And now that it becomes more mainstream, people are maybe a little more comfortable exploring that side.
Well, more, in some ways, more educated because of the internet, television, movies.
Yes.
I just wish that in the school we had more sexual course and introduction to, you know, relationship, because I think it's lacking.
Well, Dr. Lori helps with that. She does several fundraisers.
Yes.
And she does that. She did one for her 18th.
And, yes. I'm the president of an organization called the Sexual Health Network of Quebec, which is exactly that. We promote sex education in schools, and we go into the schools to do sex education, but we're still not where we want to be. First of all, we're not funded by anybody except the public, so we have to fundraise, and the government doesn't fund us. And right now, but okay, so you talk about sex education, but you're not going to find too many programs that will cover alternative sexual lifestyles, I have to tell you, in elementary or even in high school. We also talk about kids growing up with same-sex parents. That should be talked about.
Polyamorous parents.
Polyamorous parents, exactly. So there are different types of lifestyles that may not be the norm, but that are still out there, and doesn't mean that a kid growing up in that environment is somehow going to be deeply disturbed by it.
But they're not.
I think they're probably going to be a little more stable because they learn that there's different ways that the world works. They learn to be a little bit of, well, this is who we are and it's okay.
Well, they learn to be more tolerant and accepting of diversity.
Exactly.
I think that's part of it. And this is part of diversity to me.
But I find this funny because the norm that you're talking about, I remember being a kid, and when you would see a kid that their parent had divorced at the time, it was like, oh my God, this parent has divorced. And it was
right.
like...
That was huge taboo, right?
Yeah, huge taboo at the time. And now, I mean...
Well, same 50%, right?
So, yeah.
Well, hey, I actually went to a school where I was the only child who had one parent, other than one other person, and my mom and dad were divorced, and the other person had lost their dad.
You were in the entire school.
In the entire school.
Imagine.
This is no word of lie. This is like elementary, but in the entire school.
Wow.
I was the only one.
See, times change.
Yeah. And you know, there's probably a lot of unhappy marriages there, too, that... wasn't necessarily better to stay together, you know?
Yeah. But so here's an interesting question, and I don't know why they put the two together. What about if I fantasize about sex with children and bondage at the same time? Am I normal? I'm not sure. I think this person may be pulling our leg. There's a danger, obviously, because fantasizing about children or being attracted to children is a paraphilia. It is a sickness.
Absolutely.
And it is considered that in the psychiatric books. So that's something that you should absolutely consult and get help for so that you never act out on that. And by doing this, it's one thing if it stays in your head. It's another thing if you seek out pornography, like child pornography. People have to make that for you, you know, like
there's
a child being abused so that you can get your sexual satisfaction, and that's seriously wrong.
Now,
there
is the adult baby play, which is totally different because it obviously is only adults, and there's also daddy and daughter play or whatever they say, or mummy and daddy play. But that is only with consenting adults. It's not my specialty. So what can I say?
Well, babies, there is a whole community of people who are adult babies. It's considered a fetish. But there are communities. There are even adult daycares.
Absolutely.
Yep. Playrooms for people who have this fetish, who get turned on by wearing diapers or taking care of somebody wearing a diaper.
What I understand is because I've talked to people this is their fetish, and for the ones that want to be the baby, a lot of it is that it's the idea of being cared for.
Yes.
And
feeling
so
safe, being cared
safe,
for.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
But. It goes back, yes, and there's definite roots to that, like psychological roots to that, that some people don't really explore, but they're there in terms of understanding that. But it's also done with adults and consenting adults.
Absolutely.
So whether they want to engage in that fetish or don't, they're not hurting anybody else. If it hurts them, then they should get help, obviously, if they're not comfortable with what they're doing. And if it interferes significantly with their day-to-day living, then it's a problem. But otherwise, it's consenting adults. Whenever you're thinking about children, there's no consent there. Children cannot consent.
Yes, and it's the same as rape fantasies.
We could talk about that too. And anything alternative in terms of sexuality, fetishes, interests, we're going to talk about the difference between a pro-dom and a lifestyle dom and a femdom. These are all things we've addressed before on the show, but it requires some clarification because we do get emails about that. Torture you,
take my hand. From the pleasure to the pain and everything in between. Passion with Dr. Lori. News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Tonight we focus on alternative sexuality. Pierre and Catherine are here from BDSMCircle.com. You can send in your questions at 514-800 or your comments. So this texter writes, being lesbian or gay was a sickness. Now it's okay. Now you say fantasies about kids is not okay, and for sure in future it will be okay. First of all, okay, let's clarify a few things here. You can have fantasies. It's the acting of fantasies where you have non-consenting. It will never be okay to act out on children. It will never be okay. I cannot envision a time when that could be okay. It's because children cannot consent. They are victims of pedophilia. So having fantasies, you can, you know, I think it, not that it's, we can equate it necessarily with rape fantasies, but having thoughts is not the same as acting on those thoughts. You can have evil thoughts, but it's your actions that determine the kind of person you are. I believe your actions matter.
That's now, really close to a Gandhi quote.
Okay, so what does Gandhi say?
I can't remember word for word, but it's basically it's not thoughts that make a person evil, is their actions.
Right. So, and that's a very important distinction. But if your thoughts, if your fantasies interfere with you having I hesitate to use the word normal, but normal adult relationships because you're
healthy.
Consumed or healthy because you're consumed by such fantasies, then that's a problem. That's a real psychiatric problem. Right there. I don't think that's going to change. I really, really don't.
No, I think some people are wired a certain way. And I think the only thing that a pedophile could do is not act on them.
That's right.
I don't think they're going to not have those feelings anymore, but they can,
but they
learn
can
not
act on them and not
exactly.
Victimize anybody.
It's,
so,
you know, when we're talking about BDSM, it's very conflicting sometimes, especially for women who will have a rape fantasy, which I'm sure you can back me up.
It's one of the most common. Yes.
Absolutely. And it's not that somebody really wants to be raped. It's that you want to give up the power.
That's right.
So you
and you're
want
in
to
control.
Give up your, yes, you want to give up your inhibitions. And it's like, oh, he did that to me. And I came three times because I just couldn't help it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't my fault. So, you know, I think it's kind of a fantasy of shedding the inhibitions.
Right.
Real rape is you know, a horrendous
power.
Act.
Right.
It isn't fun for the person. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so.
But they are very misunderstood because of that, because people assume that fantasies mean that you want to act it out. That if I fantasize about this, I actually want it to happen in real life. Which that's not the case at all.
No.
And especially when it comes to rape fantasies or overpowering fantasies or things like that.
You know, even fantasies where, like about bondage or being blindfolded or things like that, some people will find that the fantasy was hot and wonderful, but when it's actually happening, it's not that fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like if you put somebody in bondage, it's often quite uncomfortable for them. Especially if you're doing like a suspension or something elaborate, you know, there's body parts that are taking weight that are going to be strained. I don't care how good you are. And, you know, it's
usually bondage. It's not comfortable.
It's a stress. So often, you know, we have to, it's one of the things, you know, if we talk, negotiate. But it's also talking these things out, because you sometimes have to explain to a sub that, you know, you realize that what you want is going to, it's going to hurt you. This is going to be uncomfortable.
Right.
Your leg's going to ache the next day because you've been standing on one leg for however long. And
in your fantasy, you don't have the pain.
Exactly.
That's the difference.
And you know, sometimes the sub will, that thinking about it beforehand is fantastic. Well, it's happening. It's okay. But then tomorrow they think back on it. Oh, it was the best thing ever.
Right.
It's
well, the mind,
you know,
has a way of
exactly.
Twisting things around. This texter at 514-800 wrote, over 20 years ago, we had major events called Flesh at the Metropolis where BDSM was performed openly. We had fetish nights at several clubs, all of which have disappeared. And nightly BDSM was au rigueur at the Fetish Cafe. So there was a, it's true. I think there was a time...
Well,
when there were more of when it was more open in terms of events, like, you know.
It was more serious, let's call it like this, because right now there's a lot of club who has a fetish night. And it's basically they get some furniture there. Nobody checking them, you know, nobody to supervise.
Like, basically like vanilla people saying, oh, we're going to have a kinky night.
But what about real?
There's both. They used to go to private dungeons.
Okay. So now it's moved away from.
Yeah, there'll be still the odd night here or there. You may get a group together. There are some places around. But it's, I mean, you know, the Fetish Cafe, they went under, right? Because it's hard to support financially these places.
Right.
You know, and it's also, they have a lot of laws and regulations. When you have a liquor license, there's a, you know, you have inspectors coming in, you have to watch nudity. There's all sorts of things that you have to be careful of, you know, so that they'll say no nudity. And then, you know, the bartender's busy and everybody's busy doing something and you got someone naked standing over there. Right.
Right. Right.
You know,
so it is what you're saying is even though it's out of the closet, it's gone underground a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. But it's always been underground.
The serious people, yes, because that's another thing.
Sorry to interrupt, but we remember the Fetish Cafe and of these. But of course we did, right? But
well, did you go there before you had your own dungeon, let's say?
I think we had a dungeon back then.
Yes, we would go there to socialize and meet other people. The problem now is. The serious players, they don't want to go in a club where people pretend to be or pretend play something because they see things that sometimes horrify them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one thing to see like a lady with a crop playing role play that she's slapping somebody and blah, 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 and while they all dress in nice, beautiful clothing. But sometimes we see people doing stuff that is really dangerous. Mm-hmm. And you cannot go there and say, well, don't do this. You can hurt that person.
Unless you're the dungeon master.
Because they don't have the dungeon master. Yeah. If you go to a serious place, there will be somebody who's going to supervise what's happening.
So it's not regulated what you're saying.
No,
those kinds
absolutely
of places.
But
to me,
regulated.
When I remember talking to people who've gone to these things and they were much more about fashion. It was more of a fashion where people dressed up in latex
S&M
and leather.
Standard model.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
This is what's happening right now in those clubs. They go there to basically, you know, they're young, beautiful bodies, and they go there to show off. But that's not BDSM. Showing off is like, okay, you're beautiful.
And you can have like a latex or PVC fetish.
I appreciate to look
like
at the ladies.
Speaking of that, get out there. It's Halloween's coming, and now's the time to go and get your role-playing outfits.
Okay.
So we've got, you know, nurses and pilots and construction workers and witches and schoolgirl outfits and all of that. And I'll tell you, go pick them up. Hit them, like, at the last minute because they often go on sale or the next day. Get wigs. Get things like the nylons and stuff. Fishnet are like $2 and they're normally like 20, right? And if you're, you know, you're being rough and tumble, let's say, they may not last more.
So Halloween, basically Halloween time is a good time if you want to explore role playing that you can actually get all the costumes easily, readily available.
Absolutely.
And if you wait till the day after Halloween, though, they're like 50% off. And if you wait a week, they're like 75%
yes.
off, right?
If they don't close, don't you?
Huh?
If they don't close. Yes.
Well, I know that my kids used to love to play dress up, so I used to love buying just the
oh,
costumes.
Oh, sure, that's what the costume
it is,
trunk is
it
for.
Exactly
oh, yeah, that's
what it's
what
for.
Said. I'm just
And so I had like this, we called it a tickle trunk, you know, full of like different costumes. The kids used to love, they would put on plays, and it was a great opportunity to buy the costumes after Halloween.
Well, you know,
Halloween.
Coincidentally, we also have a
yeah,
closet
except mine was,
and a lot
mine
of clothes.
Has nothing to do with sex or anything.
But I'm sure they're in larger sizes.
Exactly.
They're in all in adult sizes.
Exactly. That's right. Exactly. Very, very different uses. But it is a time that people can start thinking about that and explaining. People love adults love dressing up for
absolutely
Halloween and going to,
but
you know, parties.
What you don't want to be buying is the fake whips. I don't care if they're leather. They've often got like a wire in them.
Okay.
So that if you start to hit somebody and it breaks, you're starting to hit them with the wire.
Okay.
Which can cut them and stuff. They're, don't go for the little cheap cuff things. They're for show. They're not actually to put anybody in bondage.
Right.
You know?
Right.
They're like just for dress. So although the costumes and the nylons and the sometimes even shoes and makeup and all of that, false eyelashes can be fantastic at this time of year, don't be going for the BDSM toys.
Right. So if you're serious about...
Yep.
Exploring bondage, dominance,
don't get your toys at the Halloween.
And you want to buy toys, these are not the places to be buying
and wigs.
These toys.
Now's the time for wigs, too.
Wigs, well, for sure. All the dress-up stuff.
Yeah.
All the dress-up stuff.
Fantastic.
So there's a few things I want to talk about. We did get an email following a show we did about the use of codes. We talked about that, I think, briefly last month. You talk about code
because
blue.
I had spoken about a code blue and saying that that's the one that is usually only used by professional doms or pro doms.
Mm-hmm.
And that a lifestyle dom like myself would actually be a little insulted if someone uses it.
So coming up, I want to talk about the difference between somebody who does this for a living. In other words, there are people who are interested in hiring professional dominatrix, hence the term pro dom or fem dom, I think, right?
No, not fem dom. I'm also a fem dom.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I don't know the difference. We'll talk about that. pro doms, lifestyle doms, fem doms, we'll find out what all the difference is in that. But some people do hire, pay for it, and other people, it's part of their lifestyle. So we'll find out, Catherine. Will tell us all about that coming up.
Torture you. Take my hand to the flames.
I torture you.
I'm a slave to your
games. I'm just a sucker for pain.
I want to chain you up. I want to tie you down.
Tonight on the program, Alternative Sexuality. Joining me in studio are Pierre and Catherine of BDSMCircle.com. If you want any information about bondage, discipline, dominance, submission, masochism, sadism.
Kinky stuff.
Just all overall kink.
You could go on all night.
Go there. Well, you know, it's hard. Like we call, yeah. It's interesting because I don't often hear the term sadism anymore. Mostly submission and domination are the words I hear more often.
Sure, because most people who do BDSM don't do S&M.
Okay, so can you just make that distinction for me?
So they may do role-playing where one person's in the thing of authority. They may do bondage. They may do... tasking or rules or being like a power exchange.
Mm-hmm. Sensation play.
A sensation play, like a violet wand or things like that, which aren't very extreme. It looks a lot more than it is.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no pain involved. Some people, it just doesn't work for them. It's often after people have been BDSM for quite a while and they've gone through all, you know, a lot of the other stuff and tried them, that they've tried things that might be mildly uncomfortable. Like, wax play done properly doesn't actually burn the person or anything,
mm-hmm.
For instance, and they kind of work up to it.
And S&M?
Yeah, most people never
S&M. So S&M, describe that.
It's sadism masochism, which is basically using pain mm-hmm. as a sexual...
Turn-on.
Turn-on.
Mm-hmm. It's a tool that we use to get somewhere. It's basically, if you're... you're hot and you put an ice on yourself, it's going to be really cold. And we use the pain compared to, let's say, something that is nice, something that is enjoyable as a sensation. So it makes it more enjoyable, more, you know.
There's endorphins.
The endorphin is created by the pain for some other purposes too.
People and other people, it doesn't work for them.
No, it doesn't work.
It does if it's done properly, in my opinion. Sure.
In your opinion, anybody can feel pleasure from pain?
Eventually, yes. Absolutely. It has to be, there's only certain kinds of pains that can be eroticized for some people,
mm-hmm.
but absolutely anybody can.
Because
it's a graduation thing.
But I look at it as, you've often made like a comparison with a runner's high, for example,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So running is It's painful, actually, to run. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I've tried jogging. I hate it. I will never like it. There's not anything about it to me that I would get any pleasure from it. Nothing. So it's not anything I would pursue.
Right.
Do you understand? But yet there's other people who I'm totally amazed at who love running, get so much out of it, and I don't get it.
I hear you.
So but it's like the ways, same.
But there's different, because I've also tried running, and it was, you know,
but if
it
you
was
take
terrible.
A,
but
if you take a marathon runner, for instance, and he pushes his body really, really to the limit, that at some point the body start to break.
You get the second wind.
You get that second wind because...
I would pass out.
No, well, actually, before you pass out, the endorphin kicks in and you get that, what we call that runner high, that second wind.
Yeah, I'd never get to that point.
But have you ever done that? Haven't you done that in exercising, for instance?
I will stop before I ever get to
okay.
that point. No,
because I've done that with cycling, for instance, where, you know, I was like, when I lived out west doing mountain biking and where, you know, it's like you think your legs are going to bloody well break off and then suddenly it gets easier, right? But there's different kinds of pains. Like, let's say a sharp pain, which would be something like that, a thin one fall, like a whip, mm-hmm. right, is going to be a much harder thing to have somebody enjoy as opposed to like a flogger with many falls or strands on mm-hmm. it. And the reason is it's more of a thuddy, and that is a much easier pain. And I'll tell you, people, because it stops hurting. Okay. And
but
the easiest
just,
way is doing it on your arm.
Okay. I get it. But I'm not sure that, like you say, you think everybody can get to enjoy it. I don't think so. Some people may be wired. Like there are some people who have a high tolerance for pain, others who have zero tolerance for pain. Like, how do we, you know, why?
Well, because some people aren't going to have, it's not going to take as much for some people as it is to others. Okay, women are always tougher than men, by the way.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm a wuss. True. It would not work for me.
In my personal experience, if time and patience are applied, it's always worked.
Okay. I guess the difference is
I would never pursue it
because right. I am, you know, like I just don't do pain, so I wouldn't pursue it.
But you have to understand, in a relationship based on exchange of power, often there will be something called a training. And a dominant, could being a man or woman, could train the submissive at some point to endure more pain. There's
sure,
techniques.
If that's what they want.
Yeah,
well, right.
Yeah,
I mean, it's something, that's the thing, right? It's
yeah.
like...
Well, now we go back to negotiation.
Yes. Again, but I'm coming back to Catherine's point, you know, of anybody can enjoy it, but you have to, something has to motivate you to even go that route.
What I can say is I have seen instances where you'll have somebody who really likes other aspects of BDSM.
Okay.
And they don't enjoy the pain.
Right.
But after some exploration, have said, you know, it might be something they're interested in after all. And you have to go slow and build and pay attention to what the person's responding to. But, and I'm not talking, you know, extreme stuff.
Right.
But I've never seen them have a good time. What can
I say? You must be that good, Catherine.
Well, damn it.
Well, this texter writes, I think it depends on the level of pain. I like light whipping to the point where the pleasure outweighs the pain. So
absolutely.
I guess the pleasure has to outweigh the pain for you to pursue it, unless you are a real masochist, I guess, where,
which is really rare.
It's rare. Okay,
really
so to
rare.
Be a pure masochist is rare.
Really rare.
Interesting.
Like a real sadist is rare too.
Okay.
I do things to my submissives. I'm considered.
You're a dominant.
I'm a dominant, but I'm considered sadist because I do these things. But I would never hurt somebody out on the street.
Right.
I am what I call a BDSM sadist.
You're not a sadistic person.
No, that's the whole thing. And somebody who does BDSM as a submissive, I would call her or him a BDSM masochist.
Okay, there's a difference.
They don't like pain. You don't crush their little toes with your boots. They won't enjoy it.
Right.
But if you put them in the dungeon and the proper
context
and atmosphere, oh, they will really, really enjoy it.
Okay.
That's extremely important.
Yeah, and I think that distinction is very important because it's not just out there. The BDSM has a context.
Thank you.
Right?
Absolutely.
Okay, and that is important.
I must say that sometimes crushing with the heel of my boots could be enjoyable, but go on.
I cannot see that happening ever, but okay. Let me just share this texter who asked the question, is spanking, biting, choking, and candle wax considered S&M?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So that's part of...
Could be light S&M, could be hard S&M, depending on how far they go. But it's S&M.
Sure they are.
Mm-hmm. And there's no shame to do it or enjoy it.
Right.
Actually, it's great to hear that.
So a lot of people,
That one's a little dangerous, but...
Well, it depends to what level,
exactly.
Right? So hair pulling, like I'm thinking of what some people who aren't necessarily huge practitioners like you guys are that... would enjoy having their hair pulled or,
very popular.
You know, having a bite on the neck or
very
something
popular.
Like that. Right?
Or a little spanking.
Right. So those things are actually much more normative.
Mainstream.
Yeah. Much more normative in people's sexuality than we think. They just don't talk about it necessarily.
It's still taboo for some people, despite that we're in 2017. So
yeah, well, the statistics, you know, show a little different story. That's the when you ask people anonymously.
Oh yeah,
anonymously. You know, we get a whole other picture, which is quite interesting. Our talk is definitely all-inclusive. We do include all forms of sexuality. Some people often ask me, you know, like, why do you talk about this or why do you talk about that, you know? And part of it is because human sexuality is so varied. It's not just, you know, penis and vagina and that's it. For some people it is, and that's perfectly fine. I don't want to diss anything that's vanilla. Every couple creates their own pattern, their own norm, whatever they like. And what I don't want us to do is sit in judgment of others who engage in things that we might consider way out there. But if you think about it and you look at the, I always have like these rules, you know, is it consensual? Is it safe? Is it legal? And if all those things are yes, yes, and yes, then who are we to judge someone else's interests? And as long as it's not caught, for me as a psychologist, the thing that I look at is, are your behaviors causing you distress? If your interests cause you distress, then there's a problem that needs to be addressed. So whether it's a fetish that's causing you distress, whether it's something that's going on in your relationship that is causing you distress. For example, you can have a couple that have very little sexuality, but neither person is distressed by it. Nobody's resentful. They're fine with it. That's their norm. That's okay. That's not unhealthy. It's not necessarily a bad thing.
Just the rhythm.
It's their own rhythm. But if you have a couple that isn't having much sex and you have one person who is extremely resentful because of it, then you've got distress and you've got a problem. So it's all, I always look at that. That is the most important element. And actually, if you look at the all the newer versions of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual in our psychiatric Bible, that word has been included now, the word distress. If you're not distressed by it, then it doesn't fit into a category of some kind of
sickness
or psychological imbalance or whatever it is, you know. So I think that's really important. And I think it's important that we talk about this, even if it doesn't mean that most of the population or most of our listeners they don't engage in this, but you do have some. And it's okay to have information, and it's okay to know what the rest of the population, some of the population might be up to. And this is a way, knowledge is kind of a power. And when you have knowledge, you are sometimes a lot more accepting and tolerant of other people's differences.
Absolutely. I look and I think about myself when I first had these stirrings or feelings or realizing I was wired a little differently than your average gal. And it was pre-internet.
Which is tough, pre-internet.
It was really tough. Mm-hmm. And, you know, was I normal? What was the matter with me? Why was I excited about this and not that? And I think it's important to still have dialogue because yes, we have the internet now. And yes, we have lots and lots of ways to get information. But, you know, there's still people that are embarrassed or shy to reach out. They're afraid if they search on their computer, someone's going to find out
right, exactly. That
Google's going to, you know, have a big leak or something's going to happen. But, you know, they need to know that there's other people that right. Have these feelings. And just because you think, you know, latex may be exciting, there's nothing wrong with you. Or you think of this or that. You just need to find a consenting person, a partner. And talk about it, negotiate, and do it. If you have a rape fantasy, well, you know, you can talk to someone and you can have that fantasy where you've got a safe word, where you're still in control. You can still stop it. So it's not a real rape,
mm-hmm.
But that you get that feeling of inhibition or whatever you're looking for.
If it's something you want to act out.
Exactly.
But I want to get to just the definitions of somebody who's a pro-dominatrix and one who's a lifestyle dominant or dominatrix. Like the word dominatrix is a female.
They can be called a femdom,
mm-hmm.
which is a female dominant.
Okay.
You can be called a dom, which again could be D-O-M-M-E is a female, D-O-M is a male.
Ah, okay.
Okay. There's dominatrix, which... lay people who aren't in it will call somebody who does it, but often a dominatrix is a pro-dom, as opposed to a pro-dom basically is a sex worker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're taking money or for services rendered.
Okay.
And it isn't the same as someone who's doing it just for fun because they want to, because they're forming a relationship, a long-term relationship with somebody. That's a little bit goes into what we're talking about, the codes and the code blue. Mm-hmm. Code blue is just I'm bored.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, if you're paying a pro dom money, you've got every right to tell her I'm bored. Do this. Do it that way.
Right.
But for the listener, we have code when we play what we call basically the safe word. If somebody called red when in the middle of a play, it means that there's a huge problem and we have to address this like immediately.
You have to stop like right away.
If mm-hmm. somebody called yellow, it's like, okay, you know, they have an itch or something mm-hmm. like this. Not something important, but something that needs to be addressed. And if everything goes well, we assume it's green.
Okay.
So the blue has been added for that. So it's quite important.
I just have a question here. If you have more than one submissive and they have a personality clash, how can the dominant handle it objectively? So maybe you could describe that scenario. I'm not sure.
Oh, that's easy enough.
Okay.
That's very
so
easy.
As
there is a standard that subs, first of all, they don't share what goes on. They don't share what goes on between me and another sub if they happen to be there witnessing. There's privacy. They need to be polite and civil. They don't have to like each other. It's like you would in a workplace. It's like, you know, you may not like the person beside you, but you better be civil and you better be polite and you better act a certain way. And that's about it. Okay. If they don't like it, they're out.
So as a lifestyle dominant that you are,
yes,
you have a several submissives
yes.
that you play with.
A stable.
Is that it?
We call it a stable.
You call it a stable. Okay. You're funny. Oh, my goodness. There was one other question that I got, and it just occurred to me because I don't have the email here, but it was an email sent to me about a person who was getting involved in a relationship but was hoping that their new partner would be into BDSM and wanted to know how do I introduce it and what have you. And my first reaction was, if you know you are, this is an important part of your life, shouldn't you be seeking out someone else from the get-go that is also into this type of sexual activity? Because it's a whole lot. What if the person says, this is not for me. Now
I'm
what?
Not
now
into
what?
I could break my neck.
You know what?
I'm nodding so hard I could break my
right,
neck.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So give us the your
you know what?
Thoughts
we
on
hear
that.
This all Here the we time. We get people who want to. We even have an article mm-hmm. on if you want to be able to churn your partner. You know what? Go and find somebody in the lifestyle. There's so many dating sites out there.
Okay.
There's so many ways. Get
right.
someone who's also
because
kinky.
that's going to be really difficult if you really fall for somebody and they don't want to do any of this
you
stuff.
You could actually get into trouble when you're really searching.
Well, that's for sure. Or yeah, it could end when you're already attached. That's it, guys. We're done.
It was too
thank
fast.
You. Thank you so much for
you
being here.
You need another hour. We have to talk
oh, yeah.
to your boss.
Thank you all for listening. Thanks for your text tonight. Thanks to our technical producer, Dave Simon. You can connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Dr. Lori Betito. My last name is spelled Betito. You can go to my website, www.drlori.com. Coming up next, we've got on CJD is the comedy show with Joey Elias. We'll talk to you again tomorrow evening when we have our addiction night. In the meantime, have a great rest of the night and remember to live your life with passion.